This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net. The winner of this month's free critique of their manuscript's first five pages is Kristen. Congratulations to Kristen. This is the second time she has won. And if you have not won yet, well, you can visit patreon.com/rightscast and support our programming today at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month and have your monthly shot at getting your first five pages critiqued by yours truly. So congratulations again to Kristen. And remember, if you'd like to be entered in next month's drawing, that's patreon.com/rightscast. This is episode 29 of Novel Approaches here on the RightsCast Network. Welcome to the RightsCast Network's Novel Approaches podcast, a craft-focused conversation for writers everywhere.
Because writing novels is hard, and we're all in this together.
Hey there, I'm International Book Awards finalist, writing coach, and football aficionado who has once again gone #FullMingo, R.R. Campbell.
And I'm Maggie Derrick, and I have no idea what that means, but I'm an author, an artist, and I'm the guest co-host of the Novel Approaches podcast.
More on going full mingo in a moment, but first, in this installment of Novel Approaches brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, we'll be discussing Maggie's favorite topic, writing synopses. So Maggie, how excited are you for today's chat?
I am feeling cautiously optimistic.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going into this with an open mind. I am in the process of writing two right now. It is Wattie season over on Wattpad. And over the years, especially since my last foray, they've really expanded and finessed the way that the contest works. And so now when, instead of just saying, hey, I toss my story into the ring, you kind of have, you've got a lot of legwork you got to do in advance. And part of that legwork is writing a synopsis for your book. And I'm submitting two. So double the fun, I suppose. And it's hard. And so I'm looking forward to learning a thing or two from everyone today.
Yeah, you know, synopses are never anyone's favorite thing to write, though I will say, and this is maybe just some masochism on my part, I've never minded them. I don't like doing it because there's a million things that you can be doing. But with synopses, I'm kind of like, you got to do it. So I don't know, between your cautious optimism and my general disregard for my own well-being, I think we're going to be set up for something okay here in the end.
Perfect.
And I'll say this to clear up some things at the top of the episode. You know, I gave that very long-winded intro with some new information and some going full mingo. Here's a clarification for folks. So Madison, Wisconsin, the city that I live just outside of, has a like Division III men's soccer team, basically like Division III to the MLS. To keep it simple, we'll describe it that way. It's a new team. They started in 2019, had a really successful, awesome first year. Their mascot is the flamingo. Their colors are pink and blue. It is an absolutely wonderful experience to be a part of. I own pretty much every jersey that they have made because they are fantastic. And in these COVID times, they have decided that they're going to press on with a limited version of their season. I was a season ticket holder this year. I was all ready to go up to games. I will not be doing that, but they do have their games back. They're televised. It's amazing. Who would have thought third division soccer would get televised here in the US? But hashtag full mingo for the flamingos. That's how we do it. So that's what that
makes
was.
So much sense. Gotcha. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. We got a hockey back on in July. I'm Canadian, so of course you know where my priorities lie. It is weird to be watching a professional hockey game in the middle of summer.
Yeah, I mean, between hockey and between the NBA is starting up again here, actually tomorrow, the Milwaukee Bucks, who have, you know, it's a thing with Wisconsin sports. They're always like on track for incredible glory, but then there's like a strike or, you know, a star player gets hurt or there's a pandemic. And, you know, in this case, it affects the Milwaukee Bucks, who haven't won a championship since the 70s. That's all starting tomorrow. It's going to be interesting to see that play out. But that's Sports Corner for today, folks, if you wanted an update on all of that. And I'll provide one more update on something I mentioned at the top of the show. I mentioned now, yes, that International Book Awards finalist, because Imminent Dawn, the first book in my Empathy Sci-Fi saga, was named as a finalist in the 2020 International Book Awards. It didn't win, but it is a huge deal to know that it was in the top five or six out of 2,000 entries across all genres. I don't know how many people were for in real science fiction. Yeah, for real. Like, absolutely unexpected news. So this is like a major boon, and I'm super excited about it. So folks, I'm going to be pumping that out in my bio. Like Griffin McElroy talks about being a 30 under 30 media luminary from like here to the end of time. So strap in.
You got it. You flaunt it. You earned this. Congratulations. Yep. That's so exciting.
Yes. Thank you. I'm really excited about it. It's got me looking forward to getting back into doing another major rewrite of the third book in that series, because I do think now more than ever that readers, I'm gonna get it to you. We're gonna get a book three, a four, and a five. It's just be patient, because I want to do this right. It's got to live up to something now, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Very, very good. But hey, synopses, right? That's what we're really here for today. Setting sports aside, setting all of this other wonderful Wadi season stuff, setting aside the award stuff on my end here too. It's time for our conversation about writing synopses. And if you have never listened to one of these episodes before, this is kind of how it works. Maggie and I, we take to Twitter, we take to Instagram, and we ask the writing community for their thoughts on a topic in the world of writing. And for this month, of course, it was synopsis writing. And so we say, hey, what are some challenges that you face in the world of writing a synopsis? What are some of the strategies you employ to help yourself write a decent synopsis or get over the idea of understanding your first one might not be perfect? And then we take your feedback, we throw it into this episode, we share how we feel about it, and we take it from there. So with that in mind, Maggie, our first question to folks this month was, how do you get started writing a synopsis? And we've got a tweet here for you if you'd like to read that.
Mm-hmm. This is from @JulesSFX, who says, I love @STDenard's synopsis guide. They gave us a link, and it says, summarizing and cutting just wasn't working for me, but the fill in the blank style really helped me distill my story. So I was intrigued because I struggle with them so much. So unlike you, who just is fairly indifferent, I don't know why it is such an exercise for me every time I have to do one of these things. So I was like, tell me all about this fill in the blank dealy. And so this blogger who goes by Suze, it seems, has kind of developed this really straightforward way of constructing your synopsis. It's an 11-point fill in the blank style. So not quite fill in the blank though. They basically have come up with milestones. So you've got your opening image, protagonist intro, inciting incident, etc. And what they've done just to make it that much better is they've actually used The Empire Strikes Back as their sample, which is great because it's a movie that, you know, most of us are familiar with, so we know how the story works, and it's helpful to see what that looks like as a pretty straightforward synopsis. So I'm probably going to give this a shot, not going to lie, because it really does a good job of breaking it all down.
Yeah, and what I really appreciated about it as well is that, you know, you mentioned it's got these 11 steps in here, and we won't walk through all of them step by step because I think it'll be really interesting to sort of let listeners check this out for themselves. I'll make sure that we get a link to this in the show notes for everyone who is listening at home or in the car, wherever you happen to be. But what really stood out to me is that they give a nod to the 11 steps in their own system here by talking about it in the context of the hero's journey, which if you are a listener to this show or to my podcast in general, you know that that's something that I often like to, or I used to like to talk about it more than I even do now, is just using that sort of, it's that Joseph Campbellian, you know, no relation strategy for analyzing a story, but with 12 steps, and how there are these same 12 steps, quote unquote, in every story that has ever existed. And that's a bit of an overreach. It's an incredible oversimplification. But when we rely on plot structure models like that, even if we didn't write our books with that in mind, we can look at it in a new context like this blogger has done here by talking about it in terms of opening image. You know, it's not about ordinary world like we might see in the hero's journey, but it's what's that opening image with which you want to ground readers? How is it that you want your synopsis reader to feel about the tone and about the mood of your story as it advances here? And setting the stage in that way by providing that context, that at least gets you grounded too as you set forward in writing it, doing these check marks along the way, and then kind of filling in the gaps. So I think it was a really great resource. I was happy that Jules happened to share that with us. And Maggie, have you tried making this work for you at all yet? Or is that just something that you're looking forward to on the horizon?
It's something I'm looking forward to, because the way I've been approaching the ones I'm writing right now, and I wish I could remember who gave me this tip. But someone once upon a time told me that one of the easiest ways to at least distill your story down to the core points is to just start by going chapter by chapter and writing one sentence about what happens mm-hmm. in each chapter. So it gives you that really good overview, which has been helpful as well, because these two books I wrote, like the first one that I'm submitting is a couple years old at this point. So I haven't come back to it in a while. So it's been really helpful just to cut as a refresher, but it certainly isn't, it's not a fun thing to read. It really, yeah, this makes the synopsis sound a little bit more eloquent and lovely, which is great, because when I do this process of chapter by chapter, it really feels a little hacked together. Reads a little bit like something you would probably find on a Wikipedia synopsis of a book or movie, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, you're just trying to get the, like, here's what happens. Ta-da. It is a distilled version of your story. But I mean, it doesn't have to sound like, it doesn't have to sound as cut and dry, as technical as the way I've been approaching it tends to. So I think this is going to help.
And I think it's worth keeping in mind too, that even if it feels sort of rote or technical, it is always just about having something to start with. And I will say that, Maggie, you know, one of the things I often do, it's among the ways that I approach writing a synopsis, or at least making sure I'm hitting the right points, is by doing just some of what you've described. I make sure that after I have written every scene, whether I do it during a first draft or whether I do it as I go back and do a read through as part of the second draft process, is I write a single sentence that summarizes exactly what happened in that scene. Because then later, I can export that alone from Scrivener. I can line it up on a page and I can highlight the most important story beats and then use that to sort of start converging on what a two-page, on what a one-page synopsis might look like. So that's certainly an approach that I have used. I don't really know if that's the one that has worked best for me, but I think it's less about what works best for any one person, you know, period, end of sentence, but rather about what works best for one person in the context of the manuscript that they happen to be making a synopsis for. And I think it's important we keep the manuscript. It's important we keep the manuscript itself in mind as well. Mm-hmm. And I think Jennifer Worrell over on Twitter had another comment here for us, tweeting at J Worrell Writes. Also, interestingly, in Jennifer's Twitter name here says hashtag author, comma, demented camel. I don't know what that's all about, Jennifer. I hope you're okay. And I hope that you're staying hydrated. I know that's not normally a struggle for camels, but just keeping that in mind here. Anyway, Jennifer says this. I get this out of the way first in lieu of an outline, saying that she will do her synopsis instead of doing an outline. Then I change the synopsis as I revise. But what to keep when someone actually needs to see it? And this is interesting to me, because I would think that if you were to have not written your story yet, and you were to sit down and write what you believed would become the synopsis, to me, that is in some ways actually an act of generating an outline of sorts. And so
I was like, isn't that essentially an outline? Isn't a synopsis an outline as well? It's just kind of, you're using it after the fact.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting about that is that though it might seem like a semantic sort of debate, interestingly, I think we can use that to our advantage as writers and say, well, I'm someone who's really good at writing outlines, for example, if you're that kind of author, but I'm really bad at writing synopses. The question you can ask yourself then is, well, is that true? You know, if you've already written the outline and that's a strength of yours, can't you just reverse outline it now and then take whatever structure your outline might be? Maybe you normally do it with a classic Roman numeral style scaling down the page, if that's the shape it takes. We'll just take all of that and turn them into sentences now instead of bullet points. And you have at least a start of a synopsis anyway. So I thought that was a really interesting observation, and it got me thinking about that in the same way it seems you did too, Maggie.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that's actually what I ended up doing when I submitted to the revise and resubmit contest experience, I had to include a synopsis. And of course I was like, no, but I am a chronic outliner. And so what I did is I went back through my plot book for the manuscript, and that was how I wrote the synopsis for that. Is I just kind of went through my overall, like that top level, because I also will distill down and kind of like really drill into each chapter as I go. And I found it helped for sure. It was very akin to the chapter by chapter, but yeah, I see that as a, if you're writing your synopsis in advance, it kind of is your outline. I like the idea of revising as you go, because that's, books take on a life of their own when you're writing. I've never had a book stick completely to the outline I write. So that's the way to do it. Yeah.
And I think your mention of RevPit has me thinking about how it actually might be worthwhile to sort of put out into the ether what it is I, as someone who has been a RevPit editor and as someone who has requested synopses from people, what it is someone like me who's in that position is looking for when they get a synopsis. Because I think, and maybe we'll see some of this later in the conversation, there are a lot of people who wonder, well, what am I really supposed to include in this? And I think that, of course, there are a lot of blogs, like we have kind of discussed at the top of the show already. There are blogs out there. There are checklists that help you with this. But realistically, what I'm looking for when I reach the point of requesting a synopsis from someone is, does this story hold up? And I don't mean, you know, in some sort of like grandiose, transcendental way. I mean, that's great to aspire to that. I mean, is there an internal logic? Is there a consistent thread that runs throughout? And do we see that thread resolved, whether, you know, just tidily, we'll say tidily, whether it's for better or for worse by the time the book is over? And one of the things that I find the best synopses do is they will maybe hint at or suggest the existence of subplots, but not feel the need to go down a winding road of exploring every in and out of them, but instead trust that I, as the reader of the synopsis, am going to go, okay, you know, that's interesting. I bet we spent some time exploring that, but what I'm really interested in here is knowing how and whether the primary question that we raise for readers at the start of our book, whether and how that gets resolved. And if you can show that to me by the time our synopsis is done, you've done exactly what I need out of a synopsis, because that's going to make me feel confident enough to know, well, this is certainly a manuscript that I can work with, whether it's as an editor in a RevPit event or a RevPit-like event, or whether it's with a prospective client of mine who wants to come back and work on a totally new version of an old manuscript or something like that. So I don't know if that's helpful to folks out there, but maybe that's just a little extra context to get people thinking about it from that perspective as well.
Sure. Yeah, that's awesome. I think people really like that insider's look.
That's right. I guess I'm an insider now. Hashtag insider TMTMTM. All right. Well, how do we decide then, Maggie? How do we decide what to include in our first drafts? This was the next question that we posed to people in our hashtag RightsCast chat on Twitter and Instagram. And we have here, Maggie, it looks like a tweet from Avery Ames on this one.
Yeah. Avery says, I only include the main plot and bare minimum of characters. Occasionally a romantic subplot works its way in, but many a minor character has gotten the axe when choosing what to include in a synopsis. That's, I really commend you, Avery, because that's my struggle. I feel like everything is important. And I remember the first time I was writing a synopsis for The Star in the Ocean, which I had to do after I won a Wattie, I was like, man, I've done the work. What do you want from me? They wanted a synopsis. And it was there's just so much that happens. It's not a long book, but a lot happens in it. And I was like, but this is important too. And if I don't explain that, then will this part make sense later? And it was a disaster. I should go back and rewrite that now that I'm a bit better at this. But I'm not, you know, whatever. That's what I struggle with, is everything feels important. So I like that sort of kill your darlings, ding, ding.
TM, TM, TM.
Approach at it. I'm just like, this isn't relevant to the main story. Get out. You're not important. And I would kind of like turn again back to you as someone who is that insider, and you've kind of already touched on it, but like, would you be disappointed if you read a synopsis for a book that didn't include, you know, didn't cover certain subpoints and subplots, and then you read the manuscript and you're like, whoa, where was that in the synopsis? Is that going to throw you? Is that going to like make you feel misled? Or is that what you expect?
I would say it's all a matter of proportion, right? I think that maybe that's the really important word to keep in mind, because Avery says here specifically, occasionally a romantic subplot will work its way into one of the synopses that she's writing or will write. And for me, as someone who's reading a synopsis, if I read a synopsis and I go, wow, this is really solid start to finish, and then about a third of the way through the manuscript, we see this romantic subplot introduced. Okay, that's, you know, great. We expect that to some extent in a lot of fiction. I'm going to keep an eye on it. It's going to be a steady beat, perhaps in the background, if it's not a capital R romance. But if it turns out that by the 50% way through, 50% through the manuscript, if by then we seem to have gone from lowercase r romance with it as a subplot to being a really big driver of all of the action on the page and our character's every thought is consumed by this now capital R romance, then I'm going to give a little side eye to the synopsis. But if it's the case that this remains a subplot, and if it's a subplot that wasn't mentioned in the synopsis, well, by the time I'm reading the synopsis, when I'm actually doing that before reading a manuscript, guess what? I don't know what I don't know. So I have no way of being possibly disappointed until I get halfway through a manuscript. And most of the time, that's not the case. Most of the time I get halfway through a manuscript and go, great, they didn't put this in the synopsis, if I'm even thinking about it at that point, because it's in the background, it's important to our character, but it's not the primary thread. And I think that that's what we need to concentrate on in a synopsis.
Cool.
That's the one. And Avery actually had more to say on that point. Actually, when I asked her specifically to elaborate maybe on whether this approach changes if she's writing a two-page synopsis versus a one-page, and Avery added this: sometimes I can squeeze semi-important subplots into a two-page synopsis, but I still usually try to trim them out and use the extra space to clarify or expand on the protagonist's character arc instead, rather than subplots or additional characters. And Maggie, have you done, when you have to submit a synopsis for the Wadis, for example, are they always one pagers? Are they two pagers? How does that work for you?
I believe, and as we're chatting, I'm actually going to look right now because that is a good question. I believe they have a word limit on it.
Okay.
Which I think is, it's a fun challenge, because the first time I wrote a synopsis, it was super long. And then I was like, this isn't going to work. And was challenged then to trim it down a little bit, which, oh, okay. Here we go. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
They're calling it a plot summary, and their word limit, 500 words.
You know, it's interesting. I was going to say, I bet we're going to be looking at about 500 words, because if you think about most pages, I mean, the rule of thumb is you're going to have about 250 words per page in, say, your standard manuscript. But that 250 words per page is assuming there's dialogue on the page, which eats up a lot of page space. So 500 words in a synopsis might only be a page and a third, a page and a half. So interesting.
Yeah. And that's what I ran up against. I think the synopsis I wrote was probably closer to 1500. And then I saw that and I was like, are you, what? So that was a good slap in the face, but it's, there's a lot to be said for brevity. Like, let your story tell your story. That's not what the synopsis is doing. It is, but it's not the flowery fun. Let's get in there and explore. And it's just like, here's what you need to know. Boom.
Done. Here they are again. Yes, it's the folks of Dandelion Web Marketing. Yes, they're bringing you this episode, and they bring writers like you thriving author platforms through strategic web marketing. So if you're not sure if you're on the right track with your website, well, one of Dandelion Web Marketing's author website audits can help you find out. And right now, listeners to the Writescast Network can take 50% off one of these audits, which will look at your site's content, its security, design, search engine optimization, and more. And it'll provide you with insight into what you might do to better connect with your audience. So to learn the strengths and weaknesses of your current website and take 50% off, you can visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/writescast. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writescast. And there is going to be, coming through the pipeline here, there's actually a comment from someone later in this conversation who is part of one of our Writescast chats, who kind of talked about how it feels, like how their synopses tend to read at the end. And I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to kind of explore that a little bit. But I think that part of this is just becoming comfortable with the fact that the synopsis is not the place for exploration. It's not the place to like have fun and show off how cool our word is, our world is, or whatever the case is. You can get elements of it in there, but as the Wadi say, they frame it as a plot summary. And that's kind of what we're looking for, at least from that. I think that's a pretty fair way to euphemistically get around using a term like synopsis, because that, for me, that's kind of what I'm looking for when I'm reading a synopsis anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this to folks out there, too. It's really interesting, Maggie, that we've discovered a 500-word sort of limit for the Wadis anyway, because that immediately made me think about the synopsis that I put together for Imminent Dawn, the first book in that Empathy sci-fi saga. And I know what a challenge it was to write a synopsis for that one, because it has four perspective characters, and all four characters go through, and very deliberately so, all 12 steps of that sort of hero's journey. So it's not like they're just there for fun or to be, you know, sort of dressing on the page. But I did manage to get all four characters' journeys in a two-page synopsis from start to finish in 855 words. But that's, you know, using up full two pages to their max. So, folks, these things are possible. It's just, you know, you got to start. I know that I started with like a 15-page synopsis at some point, but that was that was pretty obscene, and it had to be whittled down, and here we are. So these things are possible. 500 words, 800 words, whatever. You can do it. You just got to have an approach, right?
And it's not going to, like, it's work. I think people kind of go into it and it feels almost like it just kind of gets added on to the process, because you've taken the time, you've written the book, you've revised the book, you've polished it and made it pretty, you've slaved through your query letter and all that fun stuff. And then it's like, wait a minute, now you want me to summarize everything too? It feels like it gets tacked on at the end, but in truth, it's just as important as all the other steps along the way. And those steps weren't easy, so why should this one be?
Right, exactly. And I think that's part of the sort of, it's a bit of a coming of age as a writer, because I think for many people, when they sit down and say, I will now write a novel, and we know how many people say that, and we know how many people never actually finish or actually don't get started, but then there is such a sense of extraordinary and well-deserved accomplishment and relief on the far side of writing a novel that we go, well, isn't that enough? And as we have learned in the society in which we live does not ever seem to be satisfied. And so part of it is just kind of coming of age as a creative and as someone who needs to learn the business end of what it is to be an author here, and knowing that, like, yeah, it's just part of the process. But the nice thing is, as we've said earlier, if you're an outliner or if you keep a little scene by scene summary as you go along, you can start doing some of this work in advance and set yourself up for success down the road. So it's always a challenge, but there are options, folks. There are options.
Yep. Not the end of the world. You just got to go into it, be prepared as best you can.
Absolutely. And we had one more comment on this question here, Maggie. It looks like from our friend Jennifer Worrell again, if you want to take it away with that one.
Yeah. And she says, the toughest part is beyond a two-pager. I read one set of guidelines that allowed up to 1,500 words. What do you do there? See, that's where I excelled.
Right.
But in truth, I would say less is more. I mean, if they're saying you're allowed to go up to 1,500 words, I don't think that you don't have to take that and run with it. If you can get it done in less than that, great. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would aim to go as short as possible to begin with. And if you feel like you need to bump it up to 1,500 words, or they've requested it be 1,500 words, it's easier to kind of add in more details than it would be to kind of strip them away after the fact, which is funny because I feel the opposite about revising in general. But in this case, you know the whole picture. And so you can say, okay, well, if this is the main plot, what are some other little fun things that didn't make the cut the first time around that I can now slide in there? But honestly, I truly do feel that you're better off not taking advantage of that full 1,500 if you don't have to.
Right. I think that that's really wise, because there could be a tendency for folks to think, because I think the default sort of is, well, so many incredible things happen in my book, and it's really important to me that I share as much of it as I can with you in a really tight space. I mean, you see this play out all of the time. I see it when I teach through the University of Wisconsin's Continuing Studies Division. You'll say to someone, hey, you know, I would like to see the first 5 pages of this. I'd like to see the first 10 pages of this. Well, and then people will, they'll have a chapter that maybe ends on page like 4.5, but then they're like, I'm going to send my next chapter just so we can get to like page 9. And then like, maybe hopefully you'll read it and you'll see how cool and incredible it is. And yes, oftentimes it's cool and incredible, but there's sometimes a reason that folks are looking for 1500 words. There's a reason they're looking for 1,000 words. And whatever that reason is, isn't as important as it is that we understand there's a reason they're asking for that, mm-hmm. right? And if we can find a way to work within the bounds of what it is that they're looking for and meet these requesters or the people who are just interested in learning more about your work, when we can meet them in a space that their head is ready to take it in and absorb it, you know, you don't have to mm-hmm. use all 1500 words, use 1,000, shoot for 1,000, and then play around, add another 100 if you need to, but you don't have to. If you can do it in 855, do it. It's just all about what's right for your story, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we had another question that we threw out into the universe here, and that was, how do you revise your synopsis? And I think for the first time in the history of a RightsCast chat, we threw a question out into the universe and crickets responded. I don't know if it's because people have no idea how to revise a synopsis or if it's hard to put into words or if it was a tough news day, for example, and folks were distracted. But Maggie, I thought this would be an interesting one for you and I to kind of talk about, because I know that you're still actively working toward getting your synopses together for the two books that are going to be part of the Wadis going forward here. But what's your approach been like to revising a synopsis in the past? Maybe we can spend some time on that here now.
I think in so many ways, revising your synopsis is not unlike revising the manuscript to begin with. But if I were to think about, you know, what is one sort of tip or trick that I found helpful in this entire process, it's been something akin to the beta reader experience. And so what I've done in the past, I remember with The Star in the Ocean when I had this like disgusting synopsis and I was like, I hate everything. The problem is, as authors, we're so close to the material. Mm-hmm. We know stuff that doesn't even make it onto the page. And so we're trying to often convey the essence as much as the plot. Whereas I find it's really helpful then to take that synopsis and hand it over to someone else who's already read the book and let them make the call about whether or not certain details are important or if you miss something, because the reader sees they see what's been given to them and they know what propelled them forward as someone consuming the story, like what made them, you know, pique their interest, what seemed like an important plot point. And so when I wrote the first synopsis for The Star in the Ocean, I actually gave it to my friend, Brianna Keenitz, who we met through this book. She was kind of like its biggest fan in the beginning. And so I was like, you know what? The only person who loves this story more than me is you. Please help me. And it was so fascinating to see what mattered to her in the book and what stood out to her in the book. Because of course, at that time I was thinking ahead to the next two books. I was thinking about all the backstory for my characters and all these things that I'd wanted to get in the book and thought, oh man, maybe this is an opportunity to flesh that out a little bit more. Spoiler alert, it's not. That's not what your synopsis is for. It was very helpful to have that kind of slightly removed perspective to help me cut out the things that didn't need to be there and remind me of things that were probably more important than I was giving them credit for.
I'm really glad that you shared that, you know, turning to folks who are readers of the work in your case, or who perhaps are beta readers or critique partners to give them the synopsis is a really good option. Because as you were describing that, I was like, wow, why has that never occurred to me to do that before? And then I remembered I actually did do that. I have done that. It's just been a while since I've been in a position to write a synopsis anyone had to see but me. But you are so right that there is something really rewarding about not only then knowing you're going to get feedback on something from a reader who knows what was important to them, but also it's an opportunity for additional engagement with someone who is familiar with your story and you can get a feel for, well, I know what resonated with them because this is what they thought was missing from the synopsis or what they thought it was great that they were including. And keeping tabs on information like that, listeners, that's the kind of thing you want to keep in your back pocket, because at some point you're going to need to market this book as well. And knowing how your book can appeal to readers and knowing what events and what images have stood out to your beta readers, your critique partners, your synopsis helpers, whatever it is, knowing that information can go a really long way down the road as well. So, you know, it's all about it's the circle of content recycling. You know, it's just, we gotta know where we're at and how we can use it going forward too, to make things easier down the road.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Kill Your Darlings Candle Company has partnered with the RightsCast Network to give away 3 of their candles for the wordsmiths of the world throughout the month of August 2020. That's right, you can get either their Kill Your Darlings Dramatic Irony or Happily Ever After candles for free if you're the first person to email them at contact@kydcandleco.com and share this episode's secret word. And this episode's secret word is fragrance. Yes, fragrance, as in the proprietary fragrance blends that underwrite the scents you imbibe from every Kill Your Darlings candle. So email Kill Your Darlings Candle Company at contact@kydcandleco.com and use the word fragrance in the subject line to win this month's 2nd free candle. Again, that word is fragrance. To learn more about Kill Your Darlings Candle Company and their quest to sustainably illuminate the lives of writers, readers, and their communities, visit kydcandleco.com. That's kydcandleco.com. All right, so we've got it. We've got synopsis revisions. We've talked about getting started. We've offered up a couple of templates for folks to consider using to get started with writing a synopsis. But I think it's important we talk too about challenges. And I know that we've discussed a couple of those challenges along the way. It's fitting into the space, whether adding more or taking stuff out. But we did ask folks directly what the biggest challenge they face is when writing a synopsis. And we heard again from Jules at JulesFX on this one. This is the comment I referenced earlier. Jules said this: when her synopsis is complete, quote, "It always feels dry, like a tree without leaves, but I guess that's how it's supposed to be."
question mark.
Really doubling down on the question mark here. Emphasis mine, of course. But I thought this was really interesting because she raised that question and I wasn't quite sure whether I should answer it on Twitter or not, because it kind of felt rhetorical to me. You know what I mean? Like, when you get done with your synopsis, what's it for? It's for summarizing the plot. Mm-hmm. And a story that's just plot with no character development or getting to know a character's backstory or feeling the emotion. Yeah, books like that, when you run into one once in a while, they feel like a tree without leaves. And so I think it's okay that a synopsis feels that way. I thought that was a really good image, and it's certainly one that's going to stick with me.
Yeah. And that's, I kind of spoke into it earlier when we were talking about that, that template. And what I liked about the template is it's, in the end, it's still a brief, it's still your synopsis. But they've managed to do it in a way that it still has a bit of color without getting too deep into the story, because I've always felt the same way. Like, I agree with Jules. It, in the end, and I do, I often go to like IMDb or Wikipedia to look at a synopsis to remind myself, like, this is kind of what it needs to be. You don't need to be flowery and you don't have to be poetic in your synopsis. And maybe that's why perhaps so many authors don't like it, because it feels so technical. And one thing I will say that has helped me since I started writing fiction is my own professional career. I'm also a writer, but I don't write fiction. I write for information. And so, I've spent a lot of time studying plain language theory, and I do like technical writing. I do web writing, and those principles are all about brevity and simplicity. And the things I have learned through my professional career, I've been able to then take and apply to things like this, because it's about remembering who your audience is. It's about knowing what the purpose of the piece you're working on is. And it's like you'd said earlier, it comes down to, what is the point of this thing? It's just to distill it down and give you the key points so you know what the story is. Boom,
right.
Done.
Yep. And here's an example of We'll turn back now to Star Wars. It was mentioned at the top of the episode as part of the content that was used to sort of walk us through those 11 steps that that blogger was using. Here is a single sentence for episode 4, A New Hope. This is, I'm taking this from IMDb here. It just says, Luke Skywalker joins forces with a Jedi Knight, a cocky pilot, a Wookiee, and two droids to save the galaxy from the Empire's world-destroying battle station. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Do you, when I read that sentence, I mean, if you've seen the movies, you probably have these images in your head, but if you had never seen the movies, you'd hear that and go, okay, but you're not hearing, you know, you're not hearing these battles taking place in space. There's no mention of like lightsabers and like the interesting political dynamics that underlie all of it, the family relationships that are part of the plot. But you know what? We're just right there. We just need that single sentence to remind folks mm-hmm. what happens in that. And that's exactly what it needs to be in the space that we have available.
And that's the log line. Like, you think a synopsis is hard. Wait till you have to write your log line.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Now you get to summarize the whole thing in a sentence. It's so fun.
Folks, if only there were a way that you could like go somewhere on the internet and maybe find a system that was generating writing prompts in the form of, I don't know, a log line and just push refresh a million times and get a feel for these. It would be so cool. If something like that existed at rrcampbellwrites.com/writing-prompt-generator, you could totally go there and see a prompt like, quote, this one's just randomly generated from one of 30 billion possibilities in a world where humanity has finally recognized trickle-down economics as a fraud. An eccentric post office employee must escape the clutches of an evil bartender before Memorial Day or an asteroid will strike the Earth. That's a long line. It's a log line. It doesn't have to make sense, but it proves a point. So head to rrcampbellwrites.com/writing-prompt-generator. Hit that refresh button. If you hit it 30 billion times, you might get to see every possible combination. But, you know, you probably have better things to do with your time. But it is an opportunity to kind of see what a log line can look like. Get your whole book down to 50 words or fewer and use that. Use it as a starting point. I spent way too much time on making this, so I do hope people enjoy it at some point.
That's hilarious. Good for you. Good plug. Way to find a way to sneak that in.
I am all about the segues. I am all about the segues so much that I'm going to segue us right into Maggie, this next tweet from Jennifer Worrell, our author/demented camel. What is it that Jennifer Worrell had to say
with about regards to the biggest challenges? Question, Jennifer Maggie. Says, knowing what editors want to see in it, what's important really. And so, I mean, I think we've talked about and around that question the whole time is just what is important, what needs to be here. And I think we've in a way answered that, but in summary, it's just like, what is the most important points in your story? What's going to get you from A to B? And then everything else is just extra, is a fun bonus.
It's a very much a just the facts, Max kind of thing. You know, here's what I want from your synopsis. I want to know that you introduce a premise, that premise involves a character who wants to do a thing, will face some obstacles, and then in so engaging with these obstacles has some skin in the game. What are their stakes? So we need a goal, we need obstacles, we need stakes. And I need to know at that end of the by the end of the synopsis, whether they succeed or fail in overcoming the true obstacle, which in many cases is the character themselves, or at least in the fiction that I like to read and write. Just that's what I need. All I need to know is that someone does a thing against some odds, risks gaining or losing something along the way. And make sure, folks, this is so important in a synopsis. You have to tell me the ending. A synopsis exists for me to see that ending. You can't be worried about spoilers in a synopsis. I'm asking you to give me a synopsis, you know? Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about writing a query letter, if you're talking about writing some marketing copy, yeah, don't give away the ending. You want to entice people to read, but I'm asking for a synopsis because I want to know how it ends before I commit to spending, you know, 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, a year working with someone on a manuscript. I want to know that there's a vision here, that it's something that, you know, then I can flag it in advance as something to work on. So give me those endings, make sure it's in there, and characters, goals, obstacles, stakes. That's what we got to have.
I think you made a really good point there, actually, that might be something that Jennifer and all of us can keep in mind is when I was talking earlier about not only what is the purpose of the piece, but who is your audience, that I think you summarized it really well, is that the editor or the agent who's on the other, who's on the receiving end, what they need from that synopsis is for it to tell them whether or not it's worth their time. And that doesn't mean you have to sell your book, but it means that they're busy people and they need to be able to see in a snapshot if this is the kind of thing that suits them, whether it's their interests, their manuscript wish list, whatever the case may be. They just need to be able to see at a glance whether or not this is worth their time. Not in a quality way, just in a substance way.
And at a glance is, I mean, a really important phrase to include in that, because realistically, if I'm, say, for Rev Pit, when I've got 100 different submissions coming in over the course of a weekend, I have to, from those 100 submissions, decide who I'm going to request additional pages from and a synopsis from. I still then have, you know, maybe I request 50 pages from 12 people and a 2-page synopsis from those 12 people. Well, I have a week or two to read through all of that and make some really important decisions about who I'm going to work with. When I get that synopsis, do you think I'm going to sit there and like worry about every word in there? No, I got to look at that. I got to scan the page. It's a quick dot, 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 dot. Do I see these 4 or 5 really important things? A character with a goal who faces obstacles, has some skin in the game. Do they overcome? Do they not? Is all of that in there? Cool. If that's in there, then you are immediately at least still in consideration. If I get to a synopsis and I'm giving it a glance and I can't find it, or I'm confused about where my focus is supposed to be, you know, you made it to round 2, but unfortunately it's not going to be for me right now. And that sounds harsh, but Maggie, to your point, when you're under the gun, when you've got, for example, in the case of an agent who's going through their slush pile, their first focus has to be on clients they've already signed. So everything that they do when they're going through a slush pile, that's off the clock, so to speak. You know, that's stuff that they could be using that time to hang out with their dog, or to bake a cake, or to fly a kite in a park where it's safe to be socially distanced and do so. Whatever it is that agent likes to do, you know, we have to be mindful of who our audience is and make sure, again, it's about meeting people where they're at. And that's frustrating, and it is a bummer, and there's a lot to be said about power dynamics and what it means to be chasing all of this in the capitalist hellscape that we inhabit day to day, but that's another conversation. So for now, folks, mm-hmm. challenge, you know, we're all in this together, and it's about relying on help from each other to make sure that we can get through this, whether it is with conversations like the one you and I are having right now, Maggie, or it's relying on our beta readers and critique partners to get us there. This is turning into quite the diatribe, but I hope I'm giving justice to both sides of this, because I really do know what it's like to be on both sides of this coin.
I really appreciate your rant, your anti-capitalist rant, that really.
Maggie, if you liked my anti-capitalist rant, then you're going to love the direction I'm taking the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast starting August 2020, because folks, strap in. I'm now going to be, as you now know, if you've listened to the first episode of August, by the time this one airs, is that yes, we're still going to be shooting for about an hour of content in every author interview, but we're going to be taking the first 5, 10, maybe 20 minutes of every episode and having the interview be at the end. And that first 5, 10, 20 minutes is, folks, it's for you to ask me questions about things that, you know, you're really concerned about, maybe in the writing community or about the system, so to speak, as a whole, or the powers that be, whatever it is, or even just to share a success, holler at me. We're going to spend 5, 10, 20 minutes breaking it down. And in fact, the second author interview of this month, so it's the one that debuts about a week after this episode, Maggie, I spend 20 minutes talking about the narratives that society tells itself, prevailing narratives, countervailing narratives, what it says about us as a culture and a society, and what it means for us as artists and what it's meant for me in my own work. So, hey, if you like this kind of stuff, folks, like I said, buckle those seatbelts, first of all, because it's the law. Well, first of all, for your safety. Second of all, because it's the law. And third of all, because, you know,
consider, get in the car, we're going shopping. Warned.
You know, like, let's make it happen. That's it. That's right. It's, I don't know what it is. You know, I'm just, the gloves have officially come off here. It's time. But anyway, speaking of capitalism, it's time to talk about Patreon. Hey, we're going to get to the main takeaways, but this is the part where I take off my hat and I turn it upside down and I put on my dancing shoes and I do a dance for you listeners. And that is about Patreon, because folks, we are brought to you in part by listeners like you, people who support the RightsCast Network financially at patreon.com/RightsCast. Get some what I think are pretty cool perks. These are things like RightsCast Network swag. You get discounts on my editing services. There's a raffle every month for a critique of your first 5 pages. Votes in the RightsCast Awards. early, ad-free access to every episode. And guess what, folks? Now more than ever, I could use your support on Patreon because I am now outsourcing the editing of these episodes, and it's a huge relief to me. And it is an additional expense, but it's one I'm willing to bear because I want to find more ways to connect with all of you in places like Instagram. So if we want to keep this up, I'd love it if you could visit patreon.com/rightscast, contribute $1, $2, $3 per month or per episode. Everything counts. And, you know, we're just going to keep on trucking with Patreon as much as we can.
Yep. So patreon.com. And we'd especially like to thank Laura Hazen and Angeline Bowley, whose contributions at the Wise Mentor level earn them shout outs in every RightsCast episode, on top of all those other great Patreon rewards they receive.
Indeed. In fact, there are some other people who contribute at the Wise Mentor level, but they want to be anonymous. I mean, you can see who they are, but they were like, I don't want to capitalize on that. I just like to be someone who supports you quietly in the background. And hey, we appreciate that too. You just send me an email, folks. You know how to get a hold of me. Let me know what's going on. But if you want to head to Patreon, I'd really appreciate it. It's patreon.com/rightscast. Okay. With our dance for daddy capitalism out of the way, it is now time to talk about our main takeaways from this episode. So, Maggie, I've done a lot of talking in the last 5 minutes. Would you mind?
You've done so much talking.
Unbearable. I'm doing stuff to quote, Maggie. And so I think we owe it to listeners to turn it over to you, he says, trying to pitch it like it's a favor, even though he knows it isn't, and say, what were some of your main takeaways from this conversation today?
Oh, I think the biggest thing is just that idea of less is more. When it comes to a synopsis, less is more. Everything doesn't need to get in there. And this is as much a lesson for me as it is for everyone else. Remember what propels your story forward, and remember who you're writing that synopsis for. I think it'll really help give you some direction. And to, you know, just to sort of bring it all back and give our fearless leader a bit of a shout out, killing your darlings when it comes to your synopsis. It all doesn't have to make it in there. So be ruthless, chop out those subplots, those extra characters. They can be the surprise, but not your ending.
And I have heard, you know, and this is just anecdotal, so, you know, take it for what it's worth, but I've actually heard that one of the things that you can do to really get yourself geared up to kill those darlings is head to kydcandleco.com/store, purchase a Kill Your Darlings candle from Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and let it burn at your side while you're writing. Because, folks, Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, candles for the wordsmiths of the world. Thank you, Daddy Capitalism. All right, anyway. Main takeaways for me. I'm fired up today, Maggie. You can tell I'm ready to go.
I can tell.
Main takeaways on my end. I mean, really, I think you've summed it up nicely. It's really important to keep in mind that this is just, it's a step in the process. We don't always have to feel happy about every step in the process because the synopsis is inherently not as creative of an act as the actual drafting, as the revising process might be. But I think if we can look at it and consider, hey, I'm doing this to make sure that my book has the best shake at reaching the readers it very much deserves. If we can say, hey, I'm not doing this because it's fun. I'm doing this because I owe it to my book. I owe it to the story that I've written, and I owe it to the readers that I really want to find for this work. Maybe just reframing it that way is enough to get us thinking about this as, well, I've already written the book. I've written tens of thousands of words. I think I've got another 1,000 in me, you know, and just saying that it pales in comparison to the challenge of writing a book. You've already put the work in. And now you can say, hey, I know what's important to me in this book. I can talk to some other people. They can tell me what was important to them in this book. We converge on something in the middle. We use help from sort of blog posts and from conversations like this, I hope. And then in the end, you walk away with a synopsis you can feel okay about. I don't know anyone who's ever walked away from writing a synopsis and went, hot dog, this is the greatest thing I've ever written. I mean, if that's the space you're in, congratulations. But you know, the thing with the synopsis is you just have to feel like it represents the story well, and it's going to reach the audience that it needs to reach. So I'll kind of leave it there for now, because you know, if someone puts another quarter in me, we're going to be here for another 2 hours. So with that in mind, folks, we're going to wind down this episode and talk about opportunities for further engagement. As usual, we're going to put up a poll on Twitter where you can help us choose between one or two topics for next month's conversation. Maggie, I know we've got one more episode together here in our run of episodes. It was a tie last month, Maggie, if you remember. between writing a synopsis and writing dialogue. So I thought it would be fun to put writing dialogue back up and then tell me what you think about this. Do you think writing anti-heroes is a fair conversation that you know to put out there?
Ooh, yes. Yes. Right. I know which one I'm. Okay. Yep.
Maggie, I chose this on purpose. I chose it on purpose. I see what you post about on them internets. So yeah, we'll do writing dialogue and writing anti-heroes. That's going to lurk out there as your options for next month, folks. And if you want to know what's chosen for this topic, you know, make sure you're following along on Twitter, on Instagram at WritesCast, or visit WritesCast.net and keep an eye out on the blog. And, you know, we'll chat about whatever topic you choose from the 24th through the 28th of August, which I am just realizing is going to be a challenge to get posted because I will be deep in the North Woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula without access to the internet. But hey, that's something to figure out on another day. Anyway, for now, thank you so much, folks, for joining us for this episode of Novel Approaches here on the WritesCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. If you liked what you heard, we'd love it if you could leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And for more writerly podcast content like this, visit WritesCast.net or follow us on Twitter at WritesCast. And hey, if you like me, I like you, you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Maggie Derrick on Twitter, at Maggie.Derrick on Instagram. Come say hey and see whatever was being alluded to there earlier.
Yeah, whatever it is I might have been talking about. Yeah, yes. It's good stuff, folks. It's good stuff. More to come on it, I'm sure. But anyway, hey, if you want to hang out on my far less interesting Twitter feed and Instagram feed, you can find that at IamRRCampbell on both platforms. And thanks again to everyone who participated in this month's WritesCast chat on Instagram and Twitter. It's always nice to hear from you and really hope we can keep up that momentum going forward. And just next up on the WritesCast Network, know that I will be interviewing Dan Wall about relaunching One's book. I just interviewed him a couple of days ago, in fact, a little earlier this week. Really great conversation. Like I mentioned earlier in this episode, I've got this preamble in that episode that discusses the intersection of writing fiction and politics. It actually ties really nicely into Dan's book, which talks about, to some extent, the Sterling Hall bombing that happened on the University of Wisconsin campus in the 70s. And so a lot of really interesting stuff to talk about in that one. And that episode debuts on August 21st.
Cool. Well, that's it for this episode of Novel Approaches. Thank you so much for listening.
Till next time, you know what to do. Write on, write well, and fight the power.
Down with the machine.
This is the WritesCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at WritesCast.net.